From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, August 30th, and I'm your host, back after a long break, Andy Klein. Kunashish, thanks for joining the conversation on today's show. Whiskey Class is a band made of Juneau and Ketchikan expats, and they're back in Juneau and later in Gustavus this weekend to perform and celebrate the release of an epic new album, I Get It. We have a conversation with singer and songwriter from that band, Liz Snyder. Then Juneau Lyric Opera will be here to talk about Who's Your Diva? That's happening next weekend. And finally, it's Labor Day weekend, so let's celebrate the folks who got the holiday rolling in the first place, Central Labor Council. That's all coming up in this hour of Juneau Afternoon. In the weather this coming week, rain. And that's really all I'm going to say about that.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hanson Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tau ka na khaya ha ani kak, gunish cheesh.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years, and today our studios sit on a spot that was once part of the Tidelands and is now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host for today, Andy Klein. And tonight, a Seattle-based band with Juneau roots, Whiskey Class, is having an album release show of their new album, I Get It. It's at the Alaskan. Doors open at 8 o'clock. Music starts at 9. Local band Rain Dogs is going to open. And Juneau Afternoon's Boston Christopher talked with the lead singer of Whiskey Class, that's Liz Snyder, about the band's origins and the songs on the new album. Here's that interview.
Hi, Liz. How's it going?
It's going well. Excited to get on up to Alaska.
Yeah, that's so weekend. That's so great. You're coming to Juneau. You're going to be playing at the Alaskan. It's an album release party for Whiskey Class's new album called I Get It. I was just sitting here jamming to it. It sounds so good. I was listening to, I don't know, I was listening to a couple different songs. I was listening to Baffled, which is, I guess, one of the first singles from that. And then I was jamming out to I Get It. Which sounds so cool. We'll play a little bit of it here in just a minute. But so you're going to be at the Alaskan Friday night with the Rain Dogs opening to celebrate this release. And then you're going to Gustavus as well on Saturday, right?
Yeah. So we got kind of a quick turnaround. We're going to go to Gustavus and play the Strawberry Jam Festival on Saturday and just make a whole Alaska weekend out of it.
I love it. Now, this band has roots in Juneau. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I born and raised in Juneau myself. And then our guitarist, lead guitar and key player, Alex Nelson, also born and raised in Juneau. And then we've got Patrick Troll from Ketchikan, Southeast Alaska. So we're all Southeast Alaska babies now based in Seattle. And then we have Robin Crowan on bass, who is not from Southeast Alaska, but this is going to be his first introduction to Juneau. So we're super excited to show him around. And
so how did you all form as a band? When did that start?
So back in, I met Patrick in high school through like MSN Messenger. And we kind of sent music back and forth and we started making music together in like 2011, 12. And we made our whiskey class debut on the Alaska Folk Festival stage in the year 2012. And our set that we played that, that show, we are going to do a callback to it tomorrow and play it as a full band now. I'm super excited about that. And, so yeah, we started there and we didn't really live in the same place for many, many years. But every time we were either in Juneau or Seattle or, wherever we were at the time, we'd have like 48 hours, 2 days to record something, whatever we felt. And we kind of just wrote music that way, like long distance, me and Patrick. And then of course, Alex was also Seattle based with Patrick. He's been in Seattle for about 15 years or so. I don't know, a long time. And him and Patrick were are good friends. They played music together in high school. About five and a half years ago, I made the move to Seattle and we finally all lived in the same space. And unfortunately, COVID hit, so we weren't really able to do much. But Patrick and I finished up our last album and then we were like, all right, we're all here. We're all ready to rock. So let's make a band and see what happens. So we got to do that. It's been in the works for 12 years now. So
nice. And of course, I know that you have whiskey classes on Facebook, but you also have Bandcamp, which is whiskeyclass.bandcamp.com if people want to go check out the music, because this isn't your first album.
No. I think in 2021, we released our first like full album that we had worked on since 2012. Like it took 7 years to get it all together. And so we have that album that was our first drop, 48 hours. And then we have our album from, I guess it's more of an EP from 2022, I believe, which was, that was our last release. And then this one's kind of our full circle release with our full band sound. Because before this album, we were just me and Patrick in our bedrooms, recording long distance at times, and then electronic drum machine, all in Logic Pro, a few live instruments here and there, but lots of vocal harmonies and layers, but it was all built on Logic Pro. And this one is like all live instruments, all like it's a full band sound. So it's way different than our old stuff. But
so this new album called I Get It, tell us about some of the songs on there. Where'd the inspiration come from? Do you have like a theme, or how do you go about picking the songs that are going to be on the record?
My personal theme is it's sobriety. I got sober 5.5 years ago, moved to Seattle out of Juneau. And this album's kind of like an ode to that. These songs represent like life in sobriety because they're all built in that time period. The first song, Walking in Space, is actually a cover of the song from the musical Hair. It sounds nothing like the original one, but just those lyrics, I couldn't not take that and make it into something. They're just beautiful. So that was, it's like, you know, just a spiritual experience. And I wanted to make the song into kind of a spiritual experience to open it up. And I believe that we tackled that and were successful. I'm super happy with that one. And then Baffled is like an ode to, the foundation of my sobriety. I wrote that one with Patrick, and it's kind of like a celebration of being where we're at today versus where we were time ago. And that's also like our poppier song. We kind of try to cover a lot of genres in our music. When people ask us like, what genre do you play? It's extremely hard to answer because I feel like we cover quite a bit. And I don't know where we fit, which is great because I love being unboxable.
Yeah, it seems like that's a thing these days, too. Like some people want to pigeonhole you into a certain style, but a band can be so many things, right? And can explore so much in terms of expression, in terms of the sound. You are based in sort of an electric sound, right? Or do you do other things? Because there's electric guitar and things like that. And it kind of has a... I don't know. I guess the original word alternative back in the day when I was younger was kind of the thing people would use because that's unboxable, but that became its own box, right? Yeah.
That's the best representative alternative for sure. We call ourselves like psych folk rock. I don't know. But then we have like Dark Side on the album, which is kind of like our bluegrass song. Yeah. So I don't know. We try to cover all the bases.
That's awesome.
Keeps it exciting.
So the concert at the Alaskan, what will we hear? Are we going to hear most of the album or are we going to hear a mix of songs from the album and some older stuff or what?
Yeah. So we'll play the album front to back and we'll mix some new stuff in there. And like I said, we're going to call back to our very first performance at Folk Fest. So we'll throw that in there with a few covers. But mostly front to back. We'll play, I think we timed it last night. It was a little over 90 minute set. So
nice.
We're in for it.
Yeah. And it starts at, doors open at 8, music starts at 9, and that awesome local band, fairly new to the scene too, Rain Dogs, is going to be opening for you.
Yes.
And tickets are $10 at the door. You don't have to get anything in advance. I also wanted to mention this because I thought this was cool on your Facebook. It's too late now because it's probably already happened, but you do have actual vinyl at Downtown Disc. Yeah. And some lucky person took a selfie with it and probably got a ticket for tomorrow night. And that's why you got to follow Whiskey Class on Facebook, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll, I think Downtown Disc still has a few copies, but we'll be bringing some copies along. And we'll also have t-shirts for sale. So we've got the merch covered. The vinyls are absolutely beautiful. The artwork was done by another Juno local, Kelsey Lovig, a really good friend of mine. She did the artwork on our last album as well, and she did the t-shirt artwork, the poster artwork. She's just amazing. So even if you don't have a record player, like they're just beautiful works of art. You can enjoy it just by looking at it. I love the cover and just the artwork is beautiful. On the back, there's a light bulb with Downtown Juno in there with a little whale tail.
Nice. So, yeah. A little callback to your hometown. I love it.
Yes.
One last question for you. The Seattle scene, right? I mean, we heard a lot about it in the 90s from various famous big bands that got huge and things like that. What's it like today in 2024? Was there a reason that y'all chose Seattle as a place to make your music?
I wouldn't say that there was a reason we all chose this place. I kind of didn't choose this place. It's just kind of where I ended up. But I mean, I feel like a lot of Southeast Alaskans kind of migrate here because it's similar weather. It's kind of similar vibe. It's close to home. I personally am not a huge fan of Seattle. I'm a city guy. I miss home a lot. And you actually can hear that in a lot of the lyrics and in these songs on this album. Kind of like a love album to Juno. But the Seattle music scene's rough. It's tough. It's super oversaturated. I personally am not like a huge fan. The energy isn't there. And that's why I just love going back home and playing in Alaska, because they bring the energy. Like they're there and they want it and they dance. Like it's just a beautiful experience. I love Alaska. And I miss it dearly. But Seattle is just so oversaturated and it's hard to get in, and it's hard for me anyway. I'm speaking for myself, but it's hard for me to really engage and navigate when I am from Alaska and Juneau and just have this expectation, I guess, or just like my heart is there. These are the shows that I live for, the ones where I get to go back home and just hang out with my homies and play music where I grew up and where I became who I am today.
Well, we welcome you back with open arms. The music scene in Southeast is rocking. There's so much good music and so many musicians who are putting out great music, and you have roots here. And that's going to be awesome to have you all come back. Liz Snyder, Alex Nelson, Patrick Troll, and Robin Crowan is how you say the name, right? Yeah. Thanks so much, Liz, for taking a few minutes. Safe travels up to Juneau.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
We'll go out with the title track from the band's new album, I Get It. It's Whiskey Class playing the Alaskan Friday night. Doors open at 8, music at 9, with local band Rain Dogs opening for them. For more information, you can go to Facebook and follow Whiskey Class, or you can go to whiskeyclass.bandcamp.com. That was Boston Christopher talking to Liz Snyder from Whiskey Class. I'll just fanboy for a minute here. I got this album when it first came out a couple months ago. I've been playing it nonstop. You should get this album. It's really cool, and it's so cool that it's from people that are all based here in Southeast Alaska and Juneau, Liz Snyder and Patrick Troll and Alex Nelson, who's an incredible multi-instrumentalist as well. So, yeah, really cool stuff, and thanks to Boston Christopher for that interview. We're going to be coming back in just a minute to talk all about the divas of Juneau and Juneau Lyric Opera. Coming up in just a minute.
Why pour gasoline on the lights in my life and take most of my pride in dishonesty with me and mine, all steering clear of facing fears, looking in the mirror washed out by my tears.
That's just a little more Whiskey Class behind us right now. And coming up, we're going to be talking to Wendy Burns, who's the producer and board member at Juneau Lyric Opera, who is producing next weekend Who's Your Diva, the annual event that we all look forward to. Wendy, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. And we were just talking as we were getting settled in here in the studio that you're just at the moment where you're like, okay, it's going to happen. Everything's looking cool. It's all lining up.
Yeah, we just had our first full band and singer rehearsal the other day, and everybody sounds amazing. We have the second half of our singers, who I haven't heard yet, rehearsing tomorrow. And it's so exciting to watch an event like this come together, and great to be pulling instrumentalists from different avenues of our community, some singers who haven't worked together before, and like just getting to watch the magic happen is really fun.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, so awesome to know that that's all happening. So so just tell me a little bit about how Who's Your Diva rolls out. Like when people go to see it, how does it go?
Okay, so really, I would say almost the biggest question is like, what isn't Who's Your Diva? It's a fundraiser. It's a concert. It's a celebration of art in Juneau and of Juneau Lyric Opera and of everything that Juneau Lyric Opera is and has been for the last 50 years. I think a lot of people hear opera and they think specifically of one style of music, but JLO, especially in 2024, does everything. So this concert, from the concert angle, will have a little bit of everything. We have everything featured from Disney songs to an operatic aria to stuff in the pop realm, stuff in the classic rock realm. Like, it really, I think, has something for everyone. And lots of our singers are dabbling in multi-genre music as well, which is really exciting. From the fundraiser angle, it operates kind of like a peer-to-peer fundraiser. So you can either beforehand at JunoOpera.com or from our Facebook page, you can put a pledge on a performer that you like or that you're excited to hear. You can put a pledge on multiple different performers as well. And that helps raise money for our 50th anniversary season. And is also just like a really fun way to have community engagement as well as just help to celebrate and lift up all these amazing voices and talents that we have here in Juno.
So that you can do that before, you can even do that before the whole thing starts.
You can even do that before the whole thing starts. Our singers have been fundraising for a couple of weeks, actually, seeking like family and friend donations towards JLO for this event. If you have a local business or anything that would like to sponsor an individual artist, that is also an option. You could learn a little bit more about that on our website or at our Facebook page as well. And then we give you some billboard style and verbal shout out advertising throughout the event too. And it's just always wonderful to have those partnerships fostered in a place like Juno. As far as just also being like a really fun event, we have an amazing MC who I know will just make it a like humorous and lighthearted evening for everyone. Incredible voices. We will have a beer and wine bar and stuff featuring our local breweries, which is really exciting as well. So I think it's, I think of it as being not just a fundraiser and a concert, but kind of a community art and partnership celebration.
Yeah. How long have you been kind of producing this? How long, I'm kind of getting to the question of how you've seen it evolve, but how long have you been doing it?
Well, I've been on the JLO board for, I think, 9 years, and I have actually sung in Divas twice myself. I do a lot of singing in the community in like 2016, I think was the last time I did it. And at that point in time, I knew most of the voices of the singers I was singing with. A lot of them are people I'd sung with before, and they were all like wonderfully talented. And that was really exciting. I have loved getting to watch the way that Divas, which hasn't happened since 2018. So it's like a exciting kind of rebirth of this event. I love the way that the multifaceted nature and how it dabbles in different genres allows you to pull in singers from totally different like walks of music within our community who might not ordinarily have chances to work together. So I think that's a really cool thing about it. It's not just musical theater. It's not just opera. It's not just pop music or rock music. It's whatever your vocal talent is that you're bringing to the table to share with us. And that's,
you know, it's interesting.
So
yeah, because I think, you know, I think when Who's Your Diva kind of started, which is many years ago now, there was an idea about what a diva was. You know, you think Mariah Carey, or you think of the, you know, Celine Dion, those sort of amazing, incredible, singular voices, right? That kind of sing standards or that kind of thing. But I think that definition has changed quite a bit, right? And now people are sort of bringing to it whatever they feel like is their personal voice.
Oh, I feel like it's 2024. Yeah. A diva can be anyone, like truthfully. And we can call it divas or divos. You might notice on our advertising, if you've seen any of it up around town, the A in divas is an at sign. So it kind of also looks like an O, or it could mean, hey, throw money at us, however you want to interpret that. But I personally just like the idea with this event in mind that it's your opportunity, if you're performing on the stage, to be a diva, to showcase your talent, whatever that is.
Right.
Bring that to us and share it. It's a unique event in the sense that, like, if you want to like channel your inner Gene Simmons and do Kiss makeup, you can. If you want to wear head to toe sequins, you can. If you want to do a choreographed dance on stage as part of your number, you can. I'm not sure what's going to happen next weekend. It'll be a really exciting time. The vocal talent is at the crux, but like the singers get a lot of creative freedom in how they choose to present themselves and bring their talent to the stage.
So speaking of the talent, let's talk about who's going to be performing. Who is the MC?
Our MC is Kristen Rankin.
Okay. Very cool.
And so supremely talented. So excited to work with her and our performers. We have a really star-studded cast, if I do say so myself. You can come next week to hear the vocal stylings of Stephen Ahrens, Aria Moore, Lisa Puanani Mohala Ikalani Denny, Skiba Wadi, Dane Moorhead, Jacob Soboloff, Christine Wick, Deborah Wood, and Hannah Grace Gareb.
So, all right. There's some I don't recognize, but some I do in that list. That's amazing. Yeah.
And I think we have, which I am so excited for, we have some seasoned Juno Lyric Opera veterans, Jacob, Skiba, Aria, Steven, Christine, some people who've been singing with J-Lo for years. And then we also have a few people who are going to be making their Juno Lyric Opera debut, who you may have seen on the Folk Fest stage around town, or people I've worked with over at Juno Ghostlight Theater, or people who you might see at many open mic nights or karaoke nights in our community. And I'm so stoked to bring all that talent together in one room.
Yeah, it's cool. You were sort of mentioning that there was a time when during Who's Your Diva, you're like, I wonder if we're going to get enough singers. And now it's like, okay, we're definitely going to get enough. It's going to be plenty.
Or it was like, you know, I think the Juno art scene has so erupted. Yeah. Like, I think we really arose from COVID, like a phoenix rising from the ashes. And, you know, you used to go out and you'd hear lots of the same voices. And those voices were incredible. And it was so wonderful to get to feature those people as much. But I love the way that I think Juno has become just such a place to like celebrate art and music and feature different styles of voices and different types of music from different walks of life. And I love as a producer having opportunities to showcase that and bring it to the forefront.
Talk about Juno Lyric Opera a little bit. Just as you mentioned, it's the 50th anniversary.
Yeah. So if you're new to Juno Lyric Opera, we've been around for 50 years. And Juno Lyric Opera brings performance opportunities by and for locals of music and singing of all types. Things that you may remember from JLO recently. Last year in October, we did a partnership with the Juno Symphony's fall concert to bring you Candide, which is an operetta, which featured just so many wonderful of our wonderful local performers. We do musical theater. We do choral workshops and sometimes educational outreach stuff. So there is a learning component too, with, I think, as a board member of JLO, a really driving factor behind it is that like singing is for everyone. Singing is such a deeply emotional and like personal thing. Everyone has a voice, and we really try throughout our seasons to throw in opportunities for people of all sorts of different levels to engage with vocal music, whether that's as a performer or as an audience member or as someone who is like just kind of dipping their toes into the world of vocal music for the first time. We really try to have a little bit of something for everyone. This is our 50th anniversary season. 10 years ago on our 40th anniversary season, we tried to do a show or a production of some sort every month of the year. And we discovered that even us, that was a lot. So for our 50th, it was a collaborative choice.
Let's go do it.
I remember that we were all really excited about it at the time. And by like April, we were all really worn out. But so we're kind of going big with our production value. We're going to actually be revitalizing the very first production, full-length production that JLO ever did, like maybe not quite 50 years ago, but a very long time ago at the very least. It's another operetta like Candide was, which is sort of like if you took an opera and you took a musical and you smushed them together, it's kind of what would come out. It's like diet opera, you could think, opera that incorporates some dialogue and that can be really accessible to voices that maybe haven't sung opera before, which I think is something that's really exciting about it.
And maybe an audience that doesn't.
And maybe an audience that's not as familiar. Yeah, it's going to be in English. It's very funny. It's sort of it's a ridiculous show. A lot of opera is ridiculous, but in the most wonderful way, where you have people pretending to be other people at this big masquerade ball and everyone's deceiving each other. It's truly a tale of like costumes and pranks and deception. And I think it'll be a really great time. Deflator Mouse translates to the bat. So that's also intriguing. I'll leave that with an era of mystery. And auditions for that are actually going to be the week after Divas. If you are interested in becoming more involved in Juno's music scene, consider trying out for Deflator Mouse. We would love to have you at auditions on September 15th. You can sign up for an audition spot on our website at JunoOpera.org and be part of our 50th season.
Yeah, fantastic. So. Well, let's go back to Divas. It's happening September 7th.
September 7th.
Right, at Centennial Hall. And you kind of describe it also, we're kind of getting back to how it works, but you describe it as a peer-to-peer fundraiser. Tell me about that sort of idea of peer-to-peer fundraising. Just the fact that you can individually pick out the one diva that you really want to promote as much as possible, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So our diva or divo, our winner essentially, is basically crowned based on who gets, who helps raise the most money for Juno Lyric Opera. Because truly, if we had to crown them based on talent, it would be impossible because they're right. all so absurdly talented in so many different ways. And I think it helps for, from a fundraising perspective, it helps pull from areas of the community that I might not as a producer be as connected to, because we have a very varied cast who have different connections, both in and out of Juno. The nice thing about this type of fundraiser, too, is it allows people who maybe have family or friends that are far away but would like to support our organization or their involvement and opportunities with our organization and just the arts in Juno as a whole to still be a part of that process. So people that would like to support these singers as individuals and to support JLO as an organization don't have to be physically present to kind of show their support and help, you know, bring money in for this event. It means that singers are raising money as individuals. We'll kind of get some standings updates throughout the month or throughout the evening at the event. And then at the evening, we'll see how our donor pool is looking and who is crowned our winner. But you can donate throughout the event with physical dollar bills. There will be QR codes up and stuff around the event as well if you want to support individual singers or if you want to support all of the singers. That's also just fine. Personally, I love games. It's sort of a gamified way of raising money for the arts.
Yeah, really super fun. Okay, well, that's cool. Well, again, it's Who's Your Diva, Juno Lyric Opera, in their 50th season producing this. First time it's been happening since 2018.
Since 2018.
So I didn't realize that. It's just some time has flown by.
We decided to like take a little break just because we'd done it for many years in a row and then pandemic happened, you know, and we all know how it kind of went from there. So,
well, like you say, it's we're back like a screaming phoenix of arts coming back to Juno, and it's really
my
awesome.
Personal favorite type of phoenix.
Yes, yes, you want them to scream. It's coming up. It's Who's Your Diva. It's happening on September 7th. It's at Centennial. What time is it?
The event itself is at 7 p.m. If you want to get there a little early, doors at 6:30. If you want to come a little bit early, get a drink in your hand or anything before the event comes, that's great. Again, tickets are available online at junoopera.org. Pretty easy to remember. Also through our Facebook page, Juno Lyric Opera, if you want to follow us on social media. And we do have two different ticket prices based on whether you are looking for that more of that VIP table experience or general admission. So we've really tried to make it an event that can also be accessible because nobody should miss being able to hear all of these people sing.
No one's going to miss it, man. It's going to be happening September 7th. It's Who's Your Diva, Juno Lyric Opera. And Wendy Burns has been our guest, the producer and board member from Juno Lyric Opera. Thank you so much, Wendy, for coming in and letting us know about it and have a great show. It's going to be amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. Hope to see you there.
Coming up next, here's Tlingit Word of the Day.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Keishi Besikuli. The word this week is teeth.
Teeth.
That means chum or dog salmon. And here's a sentence.
Teeth to this lind dach uch arch yes yut.
Dog salmon too. They swim to Teslin in the fall. Let's hear it again.
Teeth.
Chum or dog salmon. Gunnish Jish Tuchune Lance Twitchell, Goldbelt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Keishi Besikuli is Kokhetan and a child of a Yen Yedi man. She is from Daislin and grew up spending time in Teslin. She earned a master's degree in Indigenous Languages and Linguistics from Simon Fraser University and interviewed many speakers for the Hashagun language series. She is currently translating projects for the Children of the Takhu Society.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
That's a little bit more Whiskey Class there. Liz Snyder and Patrick Troll and Alex Nelson. They're playing tonight at the Alaskan. Go check them out. Starts at 8 o'clock. You're going to have to get there earlier if you want to get a seat or even get in the door, I think. So it's going to be jam-packed there. Well, coming up next, of course, it's Labor Day weekend. And we all just sort of take that for granted. Great, Labor Day weekend. Everyone gets off. Well, it wouldn't be Labor Day weekend without labor unions. And here from the Central Labor Council is Miguel Rohrbacher and Tom Brown. Bryce, thanks for coming in to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about the barbecue. Let's start off with the barbecue. It's the Juneau barbecue, but you were just telling me it's actually pretty significant barbecue here in the state of Alaska.
It's actually the second largest Labor Day celebration in the state of Alaska, first being in Fairbanks. But it's always nice that Juneau can hold an event celebrating a national holiday bigger than Anchorage can. So anytime we can beat out Anchorage, I'm happy. That's good.
Now, just give me a little background. Why is Fairbanks such a stronghold for a union? And why is Juneau a bigger stronghold than Anchorage is at this point?
Number one, I think Fairbanks has always had a real strong history in alignment with the labor union and the labor movement going back from the central point of the pipeline construction back to the old Lend-Lease World War II times with military construction, railroad construction, Alaskan history. While Juneau has actually got a very long history with the labor movement as well. I used to have a picture of an old miners union from Juneau that was up at the AJ. And that was fascinating.
Now, that's interesting to me. Of course, it's so silly to not think of that. But of course, there was union activity. No, were most of the mines in the area union or were some not union?
Couldn't tell you about the specifics and the deep history. Yeah. I just love my Alaska miners local number one from Juneau, Alaska picture.
That's cool.
On the wall. Yeah, that was fascinating.
Well, I mean, it's so interesting because the minute you start talking about Labor Day and the history of labor unions, you're talking about American history. You're talking about something that's deep into the American history, at least for 150 years.
Right. And Juneau does have a strong background, both obviously being the state capital with the concentration of public employees, but also in the private industry. I mean, it was Alaska laborers and operating engineers and teamsters that built the Kensington Mine. They built very involved in the building and the maintenance of Greens Creek. All the major large projects that have occurred in Southeast have been union. And you take a look at, you know, from Egan, the Egan construction, Egan Highway construction, right on through to what's going down at the junction here on 10th and, mm-hmm. and 10th Glacier and Highway.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, that's yep. all union. But, and the important aspect of that is what the unions bring to the construction industry or to a community, which is good jobs, benefits, health care, and retirement. And I'm enjoying my retirement after 27 years in the movement.
Yeah,
it's a real good way for somebody that works to take care of themselves and take care of their family.
Miguel, I know you're obviously very active in the union issues. What are some of the big things that you're working on right now as far as issues that you're seeing in the union?
So one of the cool things about Labor Day and just working in the union movement is how diverse it is. And there's some issues that are really specific to certain trades and groups and some that are more universal. So one thing we've been working on really hard for the last, 15 years or so is directly on pensions, retirement for public workers. But something more in the private sector that we're looking forward to and that labor is really spearheading is on ballot measure one around a minimum wage, a higher minimum wage by 2027, kind of a minimum level of paid sick leave, and then ending captive audience meetings. And that's really important in the private sector unions, both construction, but also there's folks in Juneau, for instance, who are in some bars and restaurants, which are a unionized workforce, and hotels, telecommunications. So, for example, AT&T is a union operation. So it's kind of this lots and lots of issues that are specific, but some are universal. I'd say the most universal piece would be things around wages and benefits, and that would be that minimum wage and paid sick leave.
Well, it's just basics of people working, right? And the union's going to play a role in that in lots of different ways. And it seems like it's evolving. I think it feels like the unions have been a little bit under attack maybe in recent years in a political sense. What are your thoughts there?
Maybe over the past five, six, I'd probably say about 10, 12 years ago, you started to see a real resurgence in anti-union behavior. There's been some Supreme Court decisions that have come down that have been hardcore anti-union. But what we've also seen is the more that they come under attack, all of a sudden you see the likes of the UAW strike. You see some of these other organizations, national organizations, really rise to the top and really challenge some of these types of arguments against unions. You know, that the wealth needs to be shared with the people that help create the wealth, just not in the boardroom. And what we've seen is a real resurgence in the appreciation and the positive outlook on unions and the movement in general over the past 6-7 years.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about the picnic. It's happening on Monday.
Yep.
Who's definitely going to be there? And who?
I'm going to definitely be there.
Okay. Tom and Miguel will be there.
There's going to be hamburgers. There's going to be hot dogs. I'm going to be there.
There's been talk of brisket and ribs as well. Ooh, okay. I think we're nailing that down right now. But everybody, the entire public is invited, but in particular, union members. So all those folks I talked about, if you work at a union job, you're invited, your family's invited. And even folks who, pass through sometimes, but our union, for example, flight attendants are union and,
absolutely.
You know, and pilots, all those folks. General public, union members, retirees, their family, and then anybody else who wants to come out and celebrate the holiday.
Yeah. Speaking of the holiday, what are some of your thoughts on the importance of the holiday itself?
I think it's terribly important to look back and be reflective of where working people have been and where they are now, but what also is out there that needs to be accomplished still. Retirement security is always in the forefront of the debate for working people. Somebody working clearing land or digging ditches, they're not going to be able to do that until they're 70, 75, or even 65. Those types of activities, particularly in the construction industry, pretty tough on somebody's physical well-being. Having the security and being able to know that your mid-50s, late-50s, you can be looking at pulling the pin and still not be in poverty is a big deal. You know, we fight for safe working conditions to this day. We obviously fighting to ensure that Social Security is not attacked, because that's one of the cornerstones of a secure retirement. But also, we also look at the programs that are going on in school districts and what happens locally in terms of training young people and getting them into careers in the construction industry, because it is a very rewarding career.
Yeah. Are there misperceptions about unions, union work that you feel exist today that are things that you still are dealing with, those kind of misperceptions?
Say yes and no. There's been a lot of certainly misconceptions around what a union is, or the biggest one we hear is, if you've got a good employer, then you don't need a union, or thank goodness we have a good operation, so we don't need a union. Unions are only for bad employers. And we found quite the opposite, that giving people a forum and a real process and structure to engage with their bosses and their companies can yield really good results. And that's been certainly the case, where it becomes really a cooperative agreement between people and their bosses. But I think that's changing. So there was this kind of waves and troughs, and there's been a trough on participation in unions, because there have been a lot of laws that make it harder and harder to organize unions. But at the same time, we're seeing the highest kind of favorability for unions, especially among people under 40, since the 1960s. So currently, about 65-70% of Americans of whatever political persuasion are in favor of unions as a kind of as a concept. You know, when presented, you know, is it a good thing for people to have a voice in their jobs and their lives and unions? About 70% of people these days are supportive of that. So, yeah. So I think that's positive news for sure.
Is Alaska considered a strong union state, or is it? Yeah,
it's absolutely.
One of the top one or two. Usually they bounce between the top one and top two.
And is that oil, fishing, or what are the industries?
It's primarily construction, public employment, and some private employment stuff. I mean, there's a wide variety of organized workplaces in Alaska. So we generally have a density 23-24% of the workforce. And that is a major economic driver and benefit to all working people in Alaska, union or non-union.
That's a surprising number to me. That seems high to me.
It's substantially high.
Members, yeah.
We bounce between New York, which does low to mid 20s, as well as Hawaii, which is also in high teens, mid 20s, depending on how the economy's going. And what quite often, back to the misperception, is people go, well, I don't need unions, this, that, or what have you. Unions set a wage standard that affect everybody in the community, right? They set a benefit standard that even non-union employers participate in. You know, they may, you may be in a non-union workplace, but the wage and the benefits that you receive are direct related to the benefits that the union workforce gets. So, you know, unions lift all boats.
Are there areas of the economy that you as union, you know, representatives look at and say, boy, that sector could really benefit from more representation?
Every sector?
Every sector. Yeah. Absolutely. You know,
I mean, I guess one thing I was thinking is like, well, the government sector, for instance, state government, that's largely union, right? I mean,
it's largely.
Yeah. And so maybe that's one that's like, well, that has good union representation. But, you know, what are your thoughts on other industries? Yeah.
One of the things, and this comes back to the perception of unions, is that when there is an antagonistic approach to working people and you view your employees as a means of production and not a human being, then that's where unions really have a place. But what I find is those employers that don't have that antagonistic but a cooperative approach to how they deal with their employees, that's where the unions flourish. They work in both environments, right? But you see some of the best working conditions and best benefits and the best results for both the business owner and the working people when there's that cooperative relationship. And that's been something that I've really appreciated seeing over the years.
I think recently, two that are kind of new industries around like Amazon, for instance, and logistics, like wide scale logistics and warehousing. Mm-hmm. That's been an area of growth for unions in the last 5 years. Another big
certainly
one
made that, headlines. I mean, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Right.
Another area where it has been really cooperative is with renewable projects, not so much in Alaska, but down south where they're building huge wind farms or, you know, all those different kinds of renewable energy projects. To build those, you need lots and lots of skilled electricians and operating engineers and labor just to do them. So they're finding that by having union hands on those projects, they are built much more efficiently and work better. So kind of as the economy continues to innovate and change, we're kind of right along for that ride.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you want to talk more about unions and find out more about it and just celebrate it or just go by and have a couple of hamburgers and some Miguel's promising brisket.
Yeah, I think there will be brisket. Okay. Come early, though.
Generally, there's a variety of foodstuffs.
It's going to be happening Monday, September 2nd, which, of course, is Labor Day. And that's happening at Sandy Beach. It's going from 11 to 2. And you'll be talking to Miguel Rohrbacher and Tom Bryce and other people from other unions as well there and having a great time. And thanks to both of you for coming in and telling us a little bit. It's so fascinating to talk about the history and the place of unions and how that's grown and how that's changed through the years as well. And why it's still a vital part of our economy. And as you said, one of the most vital parts of the Alaska economy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Reason for the season.
Yeah, right. Exactly right. Well, thanks so much to both of you for coming in. I appreciate it.
All right.
We're going to hear a little bit more from Whiskey Class here. This is one that I really love. It's called Save What You Love.
How do you save what you love? Do you save what you love? How do you save what you love? How do you save what you love? Feels as if I saw it from deep within a dream. Sitting by a stream, in the endless blue sky, the crying of the lone. Oh, in the starry, starry night, the rising of the moon.